So this is the fifth day of our seven-day retreat here in Southern Dharma on the third Chinese Chan Zen Patriarch, Tsangtsan's trust in mind. And before we return to the text, there were a few things in the bell, so let me just quickly deal with them. Do long-term meditators ever fall asleep in meditation? And also, how does one deal with sleepiness in meditation? As to whether long-term meditators ever fall asleep in meditation, I guess if they're tired, they do. But that's not really the issue. The issue is, how does one deal in sleepiness? How does one deal in sleepiness in meditation, listening to the Dharma talk? I mean, we're not here to sleep. And sleep makes it, when we go to bed, that's our time to sleep. When we're in the meditation hall, we want to be what? Awake. And to be awake, we need to be quite conscious and alert and have a alert mind. There are many ways. Is sleepiness an obstacle that all meditators have dealt with? Of course. One, because of the natural body rhythms, but also because one is not moving. Usually one is used to keeping one's active, and when one stops, so one can get sleepy. So how does one deal with sleepiness? Again, there are many ways to deal with it. Traditionally, of course, is to just make sure that your posture is not like this and that you're sitting up straight. Sometimes just sitting up like this, opening your eyes wide, breathing deeply, you wake yourself up. I mean, that's kind of a natural thing. A lot of times when we're slumped over, we find that if we just straighten up, we kind of feel more wide awake. Traditionally, we meditate on impermanence and death. Obviously, if you were going to die tonight, if this was your last day, and you knew that, you would not want to spend most of the day sleepy. Right? You'd be very wide awake. I was talking to somebody in one of the interviews, and they were saying they do have trouble with sleepiness. And I said, and often in the evening they get very sleepy and whatever. And I said, if all of a sudden you got word that your daughter had been in an auto accident and was in the hospital, what would happen to your sleepiness? And of course, immediately it would be gone. I said, and if you had to drive the whole night, could you drive the whole night? Of course. That tells us something about this mind and its capacity to be asleep, and its capacity to be awake. So again, realizing that we can have conversations to ourselves about death, our own death, especially, about impermanence, about, we're here now, but we may not be here tomorrow, and we may never have this opportunity again. We might walk out of here and fall down the steps. We might have a heart attack during the night. I mean, who knows what we'll do? We might get stung by bees. There are all kinds of things that we could do that could make our life significantly uncomfortable. So here we are. Don't waste it. Meditating on the preciousness of human life and opportunities also kind of wakes us up. Because sleepiness, unless you really are exhausted, and again, I don't think we could really be exhausted here. We're not doing that hard physical work. And because we're not doing hard physical work, we really don't need that much sleep. But we think we do. Reflecting on impermanence, reflecting on death, reflecting on the preciousness of human birth, the opportunities that one have, etc., helps to wake us up. But there are physical things you could do. If you're sleepy during the walking meditation, go outside. you know, bang your head against a tree. I assure you that would wake you up. You laugh, but, you know, if that does it, does it. I mean, when I was younger and used to be in retreat and get sleepy, I would go into the bathroom and I would just kind of not hurt, but I'd slap my face, slap my head. I mean, not to hurt me, but just to kind of wake up, you know, or go outside and jump around a little bit and do some deep breathing. In other words, do whatever you need to wake yourself up. You don't want to be sleepy, right? As I was saying to somebody the other day, walking meditation takes, what, about 10, 12 minutes? Right. That's enough time to run over to the lodge, jump in the cold shower, take a cold shower, dry off and come back. You laugh. You know, but if you want to be awake, that's all that's important. And you do whatever it takes. And these are just little things that one can do to stay awake rather than just, being in a sleepy, dreamy state where you're just wasting time. Right? So, sleepiness has always been an issue for meditators, the same way being uptight and rigid and tense is an issue. It could also be a relationship to your enthusiasm and interest in the practice. Right? That could also be a condition of why you're sleepy. So sometimes to remind yourself why you're here, remind yourself of the aspiration, as we said this morning, to remind yourself, I'm not practicing for myself, I'm practicing for others. I'm practicing for the people sitting next to me and either side to me. You know, how am I benefiting them if I just sit here in a dreamy state? Right? And that might wake you up. If you don't wake up for yourself, you'll wake up for others. But the bottom line is just wake up. That was pretty harsh, wasn't it? I found bowing to the group some distraction to my mindfulness. Do you have a suggestion to offer? Bowing to the group is not the distraction. The only distraction is your own mind. Right? I mean, bowing to the group. If you want, you can even say, thank you. Bow to you. I mean, when you're bowing to the group, that is what you're doing. That is your life. If you say, well, when I bow to the group, I'm distracted from my practice. No, your practice is not something separate from life. Your practice is to be totally involved in life. It's important that we don't make our practice something over here. This is my practice. And I'm trying to keep it just perfect. And I don't want anything to get in the way of my little thing over here called my perfect little practice. It's mine. Right? And if I could just get rid of life, me and my practice would be what? Happy. Together. Some people actually think that way about their practice. They call it a thing. Practice is your life. Your practice is your mind. So don't just bow. I think it must be the same person. We seem to smile or respond to the other when we bow to one another. Well, I'm glad at least you're enjoying it. Is this our emptiness greeting the emptiness in the other? Emptiness is not a thing. Form is emptiness. When you just bow to the other person, and the other person is just who they are, there's no thought, I am bowing to you. There's just, thank you, thank you, thank you. Right? Then the emptiness is present because there's no thing there. It's not me. Such a humble person bowing to everybody. I wonder if they're noticing that I'm bowing to them. Mm-mm. Somebody didn't respond to me. I'll bow to them again. See that. You know that? You've left the world of emptiness and into the world of what? Self. bow, just bow. That's the full expression of emptiness. What are the five skandhas and what are the eight worldly winds? Just very quickly, the five skandhas are what we chant every morning in the Heart Sutra, right? Five skandhas are the constituents, the aggregates of what is a human being in body and mind. And if you remember Avalokiteshvara, right? Looked deeply into the five skandhas and saw that they were all empty. That from that came the realization that form is emptiness. So the five skandhas, as is recited every morning, are form, feeling, which is really sensations, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. Those are the five aspects of what we are, human being. And the eight worldly winds are basically those things that blow through life, right? That blow us about. Right? The same way we could say the wind blows the leaves about. The wind blows this way and the leaves blow this way. The winds blow this way and the leaves blow this way. So what are these winds that blow people about? They're the winds of what? Gain and loss, right? Getting, losing, liking, disliking, being liked, being disliked, being noticed, not being noticed, right? Pleasure, pain. These are all, and the ones on the positive side are the things we want that blow us in the direction toward them, and the negatives are the things that we try to blow away from us, right? So we're always either sucking in or always blowing out. Right? Those are the eight worldly winds. They are not. They are the way of the world, but there's no satisfaction in them. There's no true meaning in them. So that's why people just get blown about. That's why people feel so unrooted, tossed about by life, because they are being tossed about by life. Because their life is just about the eight worldly winds. So let us return to the text. Let me read that one, that's kind of very free, but it's really talks from the side of practice. And I'll just read their version, and I have no idea who they are, Dunn and Jordan, I'm not sure, Jordan, J-O-U-R-D-A-N, translation. The great way is effortless for those who live in choiceless awareness. To choose without preference is to be clear. Even the slightest personal preference and your whole world becomes diluted. To perceive reality as it is to live with an open mind. When the lens you look through reflects your personal bias, your view of reality is clouded. Truth simply is. The clouded mind cannot know it. The great way is empty, like a vast sky. Silence the busy mind and know this perfection. Be seduced neither by the outer world nor by your inner emptiness. Reside in the oneness of things where distinctions are meaningless. Trying to still the mind inhibits the experience of oneness. For the very action of trying is the busy mind at work. Live in the great way where action is stillness and silence pervades. Deny the reality things and miss true nature. Assert that emptiness exists and it will disappear. Now, I will come back to the version where we are. Let me begin again. So, coming back to the version, the Clark version, which is what we're using. Well, let's deal with the mirror first. Because everything in the third patriarch's song, verse, admonition about trusting in the mind has to do with understanding the mirror mind. If you don't understand the mirror mind, you don't understand the teaching. If you don't understand the mirror mind, you don't understand Zen. To understand Zen is to understand the Buddha mind, the mirror mind, your original mind. Right? So, in the beginning, there was only this. So before I left St. Petersburg, my daughter gave birth to a son who was just a few weeks old. I just had 2 weeks with him before I left. He is only pristine awareness at this point. It is wonderful to be with him, to look with him at each other. Because this is just this. This is all he is. Right? There are no concepts at all. He doesn't think anything. He doesn't even know that he's a little boy and that he has a mummy and a daddy, does he? He just is aware. Right? Original mind. His mind is pure. Right? All of us. That is, you know, Master Bhante, and those who have been on retreat with me know Master Bhante said, this is really what the most wonderful inheritance that we receive from our mother and father. Not our bodies. Our original mind. This original mind just reflects. Just reflects. What does it reflect? It reflects things just as they are. No discrimination. At all. It just sees. That's all. And you can see when it looks. It's just looking. It can't even make sense of it. Each of us went through that experience. But what's going to happen to this pure mind? Right? It doesn't lie. It reflects each of you just as you are. It doesn't hold on to anything. It doesn't project anything. Doesn't care, right? At this point, there's only this. And everything that arises in this awareness is just reflected. Nothing is grasped, nothing is held on to. Nothing's a big deal. But this pristine awareness has now entered a body that has eyes and ears and noses and mouths, and has a mind that has capacity. It has potential. And so this pristine awareness is very slowly over time going to be conditioned. It has entered the world where it will be conditioned. Right? It will begin to know what? It will begin to know the uncomfortableness of being wet and cold. And it will cry. it will know hunger. I mean, it won't have words for it, and it will cry. Right? But it'll know his mother's breast and her milk, and he will be happy. And he will be happy, and he will know pleasure. But it's all very simple and pure. But over time, he may begin to he may want to hold on to the breast because it's pleasurable. He may want to extend the experience. Right? And he may get a little fussy when he's uncomfortable. And if you notice with infants, their cries begin to take on more meaning over time. Right. A little sticky thing is beginning to form on this mirror. It is being very slowly conditioned by its experiences. Right. And this will continue. It will, as its senses make contact with objects, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, feeling, it will begin to move towards certain things that it likes and move away from things that it doesn't like. And as it grows, that will get a little more complex. There'll be more things of that. But also it will be learning over these next couple of years language, right? Words. Words are not reality, are they? Words are representations of reality. So it will learn the words for things. And then, unfortunately, it will learn that its name is Leo. So he will give a name to himself, because we will give it to him. And we will name everything else in his world for him. And so, without knowing it, as he begins to label things, he will begin to discriminate this from that. But then, when he's 2, 3, we'll notice something very dramatic is happening. The sense of I will begin to develop in him. And it only won't be that he likes that little rattle, just because it makes a nice sound, and right? But he'll begin to identify it as what? My rattle. My toy. So when another little kid comes over and picks up the rattle, he'll get angry. Because why? Because he believes it's his rattle. And that will just, you know, it'll just become more and more elaborated. And this will be covered over. Because he's now seeing these things that are being reflected in his awareness, he's identifying with those things. And he's no longer identifying with the awareness. Right? So, so Martina, right, can you see yourself?
Yes.
There she is. Can you see her? Where is she?
Turn it around.
Turn it around. This way. Can you see her?
Not really,
but
okay.
I want you to see her. Can you see her? There she is. Right. So she sees something in the mirror. And all she's focused on is what? what's the image in the mirror. She doesn't realize that what? That there's a mirror there that is reflecting her. She only sees her reflection. She has no concern, no thought, no identity with the mirror that is reflecting. And that's what happens. This mind, thank you. Yeah. Well, see what's happening? She's moved about, hasn't she? And the mirror could reflect her moving about. But did the mirror move? No. The mirror, we could say there was movement in the mirror in terms of the reflection of movement. But we say the mirror itself did not move. It just reflects. And it just continues to reflect. So, we long ago left the world of pure experience. We entered the world of language. And language is the realm of representation. It represents experience. But it is not experience, is it? It's just words. And at some point we have become so seduced by the words, by the images, by the thoughts, by the concepts, by the perceptions, by the elaborations, by the memories, that we totally lose touch with things as they really are, how things appear in the mirror. Now the mirror is just covered. It's like a mirror that goes, when Martina goes, appears in it, goes, ooh, I like that. And it starts reaching out and grabbing you. I want to hold on to that. I just want to look at that all the time, right? So we grab on to the reflections in the mirror because we think, oh, this is something I want. Then something appears that we don't want in the mirror. And we go, what, John? I don't want that. So the mirror now has the capacity to push things away. Right? The mirror has developed the capacity to remember, even when John's here, fondly remembering Martina. Oh, things were so much better when Martina was right here. Right, and we just think about that. Right. And now as we look at John, we're thinking, oh, I should have never let Martina get away. I was so much happier when she was here reflecting in my mirror. Like that. Or maybe the mirror is just there and there's nobody before it. And it starts thinking, there's nobody, I'm not reflecting anybody. I'm alone. Oh, what's wrong with me that no one comes to look in my mirror? We might go like that. Or we may worry. You know, we already had an experience with John, but luckily he left, and now we're going, what if he comes back? Right? Like that. What am I going to do? You see? But originally the mirror didn't have any of that, did it? Martina came, that was fine. John came, Sandy shows up, it's all fine. Open, spacious, just reflecting what is. Which mirror do you think is happier? Which mirror do you think is more at ease? See, by this time, you know, we have issues. We have problems. We gotta think about. All this is going on in what? In thought. Right? Right? The problem we develop in thought, the figuring out is going on in thought. Right? It's all representational. It's just thought. Right? The thought creates the problem, and then we think to get ourselves out of the problem. Right? Right. When the mirror is just the mirror and sees things just as they are, everything is good. Everything is good. Right. Things happen, and then something else happens. Beautiful people show up, ugly people show up, people make happy faces, people make terrible faces, right? The mirror reflects loving situations, the mirror reflects traumatic, horrible situations, right? But the mirror what? Is unchanged. As soon as that situation is ended, the mirror still purely reflects, doesn't it? Unstained cannot be stained. The holding on, the mulling over, the remembering, all that is a function of the thinking mind. Because we have lost connection with our original nature, with the inherent understanding that everything is empty of solidity, everything is empty of self, and everything is just arising to causes and conditions, right? That's all it is. Endlessly arising causes and conditions. Forgetting that, we what? We think meaning and happiness is in things, is in our representations. So we're endlessly pursuing our representations, our belief that things have meaning, and not seeing that there's no such thing as a thing because they're just arising because of causes and conditions. They're in a state of flux. There's nothing solid there. But we think, because we've lost touch, right? We don't see the mirror. We only see the reflection. Right? When we go into the bathroom, we only care about what? How I look. And we look at how I look as if somehow if I look good, then I'm happy. And if I don't look good, then I'm unhappy. We are totally entranced with what? The reflection. We think that's meaning. But that's always changing. There's nothing permanent or stable in that. So that's why we find that throughout life we are continually what? Disappointed. Frustrated. Because there's no meaning in the endless changing world of what's appearing in the mirror. It is just what it is. So now we are so lost in the world of our representational thinking, so lost in the world of words, right? That as somebody pointed out yesterday, I don't need you. I can have conversations with you myself all day, right? True, isn't it, right? We can have a dialogue, and we do have a dialogue, right? About everything and anything, with anybody we want, alive or dead, in our minds, just thoughts. But thoughts aren't real. They have no inherent reality. They're unstable. They're like flowers in air. You're never going to find meaning in it. You're never going to find happiness in it. Because things don't have that capacity. Happiness is a condition of mind. So, it is because of that that the third patriarch says what? The more you talk and think about it, the further you wander from the truth. Stop talking and thinking, and there is nothing that you will not be able to know. I mean, that's quite a bill of goods he's selling. Stop talking and thinking, and there is nothing you will not be able to know. This is revolutionary. Revolutionary. Because our idea is, the more I talk about this, the more I think about it, the more I'll know. And then one day I'll get it. Right? Everybody in here, whether you believe it or not, that's what's going on. Right? We love talking about Dharma, don't we? We love talking about this and that practice. And we love just thinking about it and reading about it. Don't we? We do. We love it. And yet he says, the more you do that, the further from the truth you'll go. Right? It's like, you know, sometimes you see toddlers when they don't get crawling forwards, they crawl backwards, you know. It's very frustrating to them because they just, you know, they want to go forward and then they just go backwards. It's, anybody ever have a child like that or were a child like that? It's a very frustrating thing. Usually most children work it out. The more you talk and think on it, the further from the truth you get. Could it be that? It's not found in words. The more you talk and think about it, the further astray you wander from the truth. Stop talking and thinking, and there's nothing you will not be able to know. Again, the mirror mind knows things just as they are. They know things are empty of permanence. They know things are not solid, and therefore they just let things come and go. They do not grasp. Sees things just as they are, because things appear as they are. There's no perception, there's no projection, there's no interpretation, there's no liking, disliking. So things reveal their true meaning. Other than what? Other than the meaning that we give things. And we give meaning to everything. How am I doing in my practice? Right? That's a major concern for most people. And when they think they're doing good, how do they feel? How do they feel, Claire?
Happy.
Happy. Let's have a party, right? I'm doing good in my practice. And when we think to ourselves, I'm not doing good in my practice, how are we? How do we feel?
Frustrated.
And that's all coming from where? From our thinking mind. That's attached to a self. Bad combination. See, that's it. That's that problem with the child. Not only is it kind of getting these instincts of liking and disliking and wanting and needing, right? But it's also at the same time developing a stronger sense of self. You put them together and what do you got? Terrible twos. Anybody everybody know about the terrible twos? There it is. Right? Out of control, those terrible twos. Self and wanting and needing and thinking, it's should have never let them out of diapers. Right? So that's it, right? Not only is there a perception, right, that my practice isn't the way I want, right, Claire? But there's also a self that wants to what? Wants to get it right. Doesn't like not to get it right. Right? So it kind of, can you see what feeds on it?
Yeah.
So we have a thought, a comparison, my practice is not going well, but that's only because we have a thought about how we think our practice should go, or a memory, how we think it went, or, which is again just mental representation, right? So then we have that, but then we have a self, and our self has themes, right? Because we have all these mental formations in our mind. Our self has themes of what? I'm not worthy, or I'm perfect, and we go either way, and either way, that not getting it right is either a confirmation of my unworthiness, so I'll go down that rabbit hole, or I want to be perfect, and it's just frustrating that I'm not perfect in this moment, so I go down that rabbit hole, or, everybody's got their own little variations and themes, depending on their own conditioning. Just conditioning. Just in case you didn't get it. Thank you. We're trying. That's the sound of the Buddha. Trying to wake us up. Let me just see how that other... So Clark says, the more you talk and think about it, the further astray you wander from the truth. Stop talking and thinking, and there's nothing you will not be able to know. And they just say, to experience reality, stop using words. For the more you talk about things, and again, talk is also inner talk. Is that clear? We talk with our mouth, but we also talk inwardly. So the more we talk about things, things are just everything, the further from the truth you stray. So this is why we practice mindfulness. Right? Why we practice bare attention. Right? Why? Because mindfulness allows us to experience things just as they are, right? For many of us, the first book about mindfulness was Thich Nhat Hanh's The Miracle of Mindfulness, right? Very simple, very sweet. Drinking a cup of tea, just drink a cup of tea. Remember? Eat the orange. Just eat the orange. Taste the orange. Don't call it an orange, just experience. Let the mirror mind That's why when walking, just walk. Right? When looking, just look. When hearing, just hear. Remember that? Basic instructions. We all got the first day we showed up for practice. For some of us, that's a year ago. For some of us, that's 10 years ago. For some of those, that's 30 or 40 years ago. Still, totally true. At the end of the day, that's what it all comes down to. Mindfulness cleanses, so at least we can see that that's all that's happening. Concentration allows us to enter the experience more deeply. Getting closer to the mirror mind. But the deep looking, the breakthrough is when we actually perceive it as it is. Stop talking and thinking, there's nothing you will not be able to know. To return to the root is to find the meaning, but to pursue appearances is to miss the source. So we might say, I don't want to live a shallow existence. I don't want to live a superficial existence, right? Well, what does that mean? That means somebody who's living a shallow existence, somebody who's living a superficial existence, somebody who's just skimming the surface of life is what? They're just, all they care about is appearances. You know people like that? You may know there are parts of yourself that are like, all you care about is how things appear. Want to look good. Want other people to like me. Want other people to think I'm smart. This, that. Just want to have fun. Just want to enjoy myself. Just want to skim across the ice. But we know that's a superficial life. It's a life that very easily is disturbed when things don't go the way they're supposed to go. So we want to really understand what is the meaning of all this, of this life. We want to understand the meaning so we can really be happy, not in a superficial way. Superficial way is, you always got to keep the party going. Right? You ever been around those kind of people? When the party stops, they're not happy. They're grumpy. They're grouchy. They're sad. They're angry. They're worried. Right? So they just what? They call up their friends and say, what? Let's have a party. Let's keep the party going. They don't want the party to stop because then they'd have to face their inner emptiness. And this is not a judgment. Again, people are empty, as the third patriarch in the 6th century said, because they don't live in truth. They live in appearances. So he says, if the purpose of life is to find meaning, we have to look beyond the reflections. We have to seek the mirror itself. Because the mirror itself reflects the deeper meaning of things. That things are empty, that things are impermanent, that things arise according to causes and condition. And that everything is perfect just as it is. And in that knowing, there is a deep ease, a deep peace, a deep openness, that has nothing to do with the reflections. So, you know, we want to get to the source of things. In Buddhist meditation, that's called what? Deep looking. I want to get to the source of things. Right? There seems to be a self. I hear the voice of I, me, mine. Where's this voice coming from? What is the source of I, me, mine? Is there really a self? My mind's driving me crazy. Do I really have a mind? Does it really exist? I want to get to the bottom of things. So that deep looking is the third part of Buddhist meditation: mindfulness, concentration, insight, deep looking. That is the way we return to the source. On the way, we are doing what? Letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go. And again, don't think this means you have to go home and sell all your possessions. Right? I mean, you could. Maybe people have done that. Actually, when Layman Pong decided he'd get rid of his possessions. He was a famous Chinese layman, the Layman Pong. Both he, his wife, and his daughter and son were all enlightened. It's a famous family in Chinese Zen. But Layman Pong, when he decided he was done with stuff, he took all his money or gold or all his stuff, and rather than giving it away, as you'd think he'd do, right, he actually put it in a basket, rowed it out to the middle of the lake, and dropped it in. He said, these things have only been a bother for me. Why should I bother somebody else with them? Interesting. Layman Pong, very famous Zen layman, said, you know, the things, people only get entangled in them. I wouldn't be doing them a service by giving them my things. Interesting way to look at it, eh? Not the way we would look. So it is not things that we have to let go of. We have to let go of our attachment to things. We have to let go of our clinging to things. And we have to let go of our picking and choosing on things, about things, our preferences. When we let go of that, then our relationship is the key piece here. Our relationship with things is easy, right? Because we understand what? That things come and go. That's just their nature. It's not a moral judgment. It's just the way, it's the nature of things. Because everything is arising according to dependent origination, and, you know, that's just the deal. Including this body. Arose because of causes and conditions, and we'll stay alive in a certain way because of causes and conditions, and we'll decay according to causes and conditions, and we'll disappear, you know, just, right? And everything else, right? We say the five remembrances, right? Every day. All conditioned things are subject to decay and change, so therefore we will be separated from everything. Please, when you read the five remembrances every morning, don't read them like it's just something you read. Reflect deeply. They're talking about deep things. In the fifth remembrance, how does it go? So after reminding ourselves that everything is subject to aging, and everything is subject to ill health, and everything is subject to death, and everything is subject to impermanence and change, and all coming together lead to partings, and we're going to be separate from everything, separated at some point from everything. The last verse says what? Anybody remember? Our actions are the greatest. That's only our actions of body, speech, and mind are the only thing. So it's the only key thing is how do I relate to this ever-changing, impermanent world? That's the practice is to see things as they really are, and then to live in a way that expresses that understanding. It's how we relate to things, how we relate to objects, how we relate to people, how we relate to our own thoughts, feelings, and emotions. Do we do it, you know, with pristine awareness, non-grasping, letting go, no preferences? Or are we just on a mission of what do they call it? Destroy. What is that? When they say they go out there, the military, they're on a mission to something and destroy. I don't know. Seek and destroy, right? I mean, are we just what? That's a search and destroy. I mean, that's like many of us. We're just on a mission, right? Control and manipulation. From the moment we get up, make it all go my way. Stay, go my way. And then how does it go when you set out in the morning to make it go your way? How does the day go? Happy day? Easy day? No. Miserable. Get up in the morning just with an empty mind. How does the gata go? The morning got to a brand new day, 24 hours. What? How does it go? Anybody know what today is a 20 brand? And look at all beings with eyes of compassion. There you go. Nothing about search and destroy. Nothing about, you know, 24 brand new hours that I can just control and manipulate the hell out of to make everything go my way, and then I'll be happy. I mean, there are probably people who consciously get up and make that affirmation. They are the rulers of the world. Right? They are the people in the seats of power. And they get up with that affirmation in the morning. But those of us who seek another kind of power in life, not the power over, have a different affirmation. We wake up 24 brand new hours to live in truth, to live in mindfulness, to be of benefit to beings. So if you get up with that kind of mind, that kind of intention, and that's the way you live your day, but most people, even you know, the great power people, it's search and destroy. But then everybody else is sort of these days is what? They get up and the first thing they pull out is their what? The to-do list. To 24 brand new hours to do my to-do list. To check off all the things I got to do. Get out my day planner, right? First thing in the morning, all the things I got to do. Busy, 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 busy. Before that, before you pull out your day planner, before you pull out your list of things to do, make the vow. I vow to live in mindfulness today. I vow to live at ease. I vow to live a life without preferences, full of opinions. I vow to be kind in my relationships with everything, including myself, including my mind. How about that for a way to start the day? think you might be happier living that way, more at peace. It is a choice. At the moment of inner enlightenment, there is a going beyond appearance and emptiness. The changes that appear to occur in the empty world we call real only because of our ignorance. So, at the moment of inner enlightenment, there is a going beyond appearance and emptiness. In that other translation, it says, return to the oneness and discover the essence. Being dazzled by appearance, you miss the truth. Go beyond both appearance and emptiness and find the unmoving center. Pursue the confusion of your opinions, and the eternal mind is lost. So it says, at the moment of inner enlightenment, there is a going beyond appearance and emptiness. So this speaks to, again, in this path, it is a path that is seeking some kind of what we might call enlightenment. Right. Some kind of understanding. That goes beyond what he says here as appearance and emptiness, right? Appearance and emptiness means, whether the world of appearances, the world of how things appear to the mind, as well as, any kind of inner feelings of emptiness. We talked about their voidness or, outwardly it's all about things. Inwardly there's this kind of an empty void. That's where many people are. That's why they never stop. Right? They're either out here lost in the world of appearances, and when they stop, all they feel is this kind of void, alienation, anguish, existential despair, whatever you want to call it inside. So they're always, right? That's the kind of polarity. Right? Most people don't like this one, so they're always jumping around out there, trying to make things happen in the world of appearance. Tell me if I'm wrong. Okay. So he says, the inner enlightenment of this path goes beyond both. This is important. Okay, and this points to that the transformative nature of this experience of practice and realization. Okay. It is not simply about, as we said earlier in the retreat, going from maximum to minimum security. Many people consider, a spiritual path really about kind of making things nicer and safer, less anguish. Right? So it's, for most people, it's really about just changing their thoughts. They're a little kinder, not as harsh. They're not as guilt-ridden. They're not as shame-riven. They practice forgiveness, right? They don't feel insecure anymore because they have a belief system that tells them that they will be saved and everything will be all right, if they just do this, and this. So for most people, and that's what we basically call religion, for most people, that kind of shift in their life is just a shift. Can you see? It's just kind of rearranging the thoughts, kind of having better thoughts, kinder thoughts, more understanding thoughts. But all of that is still going on in what? In the world of appearance and emptiness. But now in that world of appearance and emptiness, they found kind of a safe haven. And I'm not, belittling that or anything, I'm just pointing that out. That the what he's talking about here, you know, and again, these are in these traditions of Zen and the other meditative traditions that promote, you know, I don't know, for a better word, radical transformation. Total deconstruction. Is it going beyond the world of appearances, the world of feelings? It is going beyond the world of self. In most religions or teachings, it's, you know, you don't hear give up all opinions. It's just have the right opinions. Right? When most religions talk about most, they say, pursue truth, right? They say what? They give you a truth. Pursue my truth, because my truth is the truth. But when the third patriarch, when Zen talks about the truth, they talk about the truths of things as they are. Return to the source. Don't, you know, rise up. Return to the source of things. Return to your original mind. It's not about levitation. It's not about rebirth in heaven. It's not about the rapture. Returning to the source. Looking in the mirror and not just seeing yourself, but seeing the mirror that is reflecting the self. So this is profound stuff. Right? That's why, you know, traditionally Zen masters, Dzogchen masters, you know, they were up in, right, temples and monasteries, retreat centers, up there. You know, this is not stuff that, you know, many people in the marketplace are interested in purchasing, right? And that's fine. But, you know, some people are called from deep within to understand more deeply the nature of life and want a happiness and a peace of mind that is not dependent on conditioning, on conditions. Most people, their mind state is based on the conditions of their life. Right, Claire? So when the conditions in our life we perceive as good, we are what?
Happy.
Things are good. And when the conditions in our life aren't working the way we want, how are we, Claire?
Sad, angry.
Sad, angry. Yeah, there you go. Thank you for speaking for all of us. Out of the mouth of babes comes wisdom. Right. And that's considered normal, right? And again, we all know that normality of life, right? Where our mood is based on conditionings, how things are going. And how things are going, who is making that judgment? The self. But what is the self? But just another conditioned thing. It doesn't have any absolute knowledge, does it? No. It's only when you become enlightened that true knowledge and understanding appears, and that's when you go beyond your conditioning. Right? So how can the self have real understanding? Now, for all of you who are working on your issues, all of you who are working out your problems, stop it. That which is working out the problems is the one that created your problems. The changes that appear in the empty world are real because of our ignorance. Changes are just changes. We give them names. Birth, death, coming, going. So, you see the mirror? I can't see. Can you see it? This is the mirror, see? There's something passing through, isn't there? It's coming. It's going. It's gone. But what didn't change? The mirror. The awareness, the mirror mind. It's only in the reflections that things appear to change, that things appear to move. So why get so upset when things change? It's because what? Because we're just watching this. That's why in Dharma we say, don't watch things, watch your mind. Right? You ever hear that? Yeah. You've probably heard it for 40 years. Yeah. Because this is, you know, this is just moving. Right? It's just a reflection of this. It only appears to be moving in the reflection, in the world of reflection. In the world of the mirror mind, nothing is moved. See? This is kind of, I mean, this is, if I did this all day, I'd be exhausted, this poor hand, right? But if I did this in front of the mirror all day like this, right? The hand would be exhausted, but how would the mirror be? Fine. Right? You can keep it up as long as you want. Right, Andrew? You can keep up your stuff as long as you want. And you'll be exhausted. But your mirror mind, that just holds, that just sees all that. That just sees all that stuff coming and going. Right? And how do I know that Andrew knows that? Because Andrew can say, at the end of the day, wow, so much stuff today. But what said that? What was aware that there was all this stuff going? No, the stuff is just, stuff believes it's stuff. Mm-mm, something else so it sees your stuff and can just say, just stuff. And can make that statement about your stuff and your rotten, lousy day with clarity and objectivity and ease. Yeah. See? How was your day-to-day, Fred? Terrible. But look. That which is said terrible, is that terrible? No, that's fine. What are you going to identify with? The reflections or the mirror? If you can see it, it can't be you, the original you. When you say, I am aware that there's anger in me, well, you're in that statement, you're saying, there is something more than the anger that can hold that anger. What is that? I am aware that there's anxiety in me. Well, what is that that can be aware of the anxiety and hold it? Your mirror mind, your original mind, awareness. What are you going to identify with? The endless comings and goings of your emotions and feelings. What does the third patriarch say? Just let it go. Stop picking and choosing, making a big deal about things. Return to the source. Or as one of the interpreters says, return to the stillness. You want to work out your issues? Let them go. Return to the empty stillness of your own mind. And let your own intuitive understanding see clearly. Then there'll be a real working out. You have issues, put them down. Return to your home, right? And in that place of stillness, of quiet, right? The answer will come. I was in the bathroom, usually not in the bathroom with my glasses, but was in the bathroom, somebody put up some quote from Albert Einstein. I don't know if you saw that, or maybe everybody's seen it. I'm the last one to see it. But something about, what did he say? Every theory I've come up with, I never got it through thinking. It just came to me. Put it down. We're scared to put it down. We love just to ruminate and obsess. We said earlier, you know, we got one knot in the rope. Let me see how many more knots I can put in it. And we wonder, we feel like we're all tied up by our issues. Put the rope down. You know what they say, you know, in Zen, they say, you know, just let the snake alone. It'll uncoil itself. Even a poisonous snake, right? Just leave it be. It will eventually uncoil itself and just go its own way. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to kill it. You don't have to step on it. You don't have to panic. Just stop. Right? Stop. Just let it be. It will be fine. So trust in the mind. Please, for the rest of the retreat, every time you see a mirror, and I'll leave this mirror here. And maybe if you have home altars, you might want to put a little mirror on your altar to remind you of your mirror mind. That's the Buddha mind. We could maybe take down the Buddha and just put up a mirror. Some Buddhist altars, they have a thing, a mirror-like thing. And also sometimes they put up, what do they call those glass things?
Crystals.
Crystals. Because why? Because they're clear and they reflect everything. Just like that. These are all symbols for the mind, for intrinsic mind. So we'll stop there, or stop here. Remember the mirror. Host and guest, mirror reflection. What stays, what comes and goes. Practice this way.